So welcome to our Saturday Bhagavad Gita class. We are still on the first chapter, and as usual we will together chant all the verses of the first chapter. Krishna. So we were last time on text 39. We have seen so far three reasons for Arjun refusing to fight. The first was compassion. The second was inability to enjoy the royal kingdom in the absence of his relatives and loved ones. The third was of the fear of suffering sinful reactions as a result of killing his elders and other relatives. And from text 39, half of which we concluded last time, Arjun is beginning the fourth reason for his refusal to fight in the battle. And that logic he is going to establish in the next couple of verses. So we will just briefly go through text 39 again. So kindly chant after me. Kulakshaye pranashyanti Kuladharma sanatanah Dharme nashte kulam kritsnam Adharmo bhibhavatyuta Translation. With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. So here, Arjuna is talking about a sequence of events. The first is that there is a family that comprises so many people, the elders, the young people, the men, the women, children, everyone. So he says, kulakshaye, when the kula or the family is destroyed, pranashyanti kula dharmaha sanatanah, then the eternal kula dharma, the religious principles of the family, pranashyanti, are destroyed. Dharme nashte kulam kritsnam adharma abhavatyuta. And when the religious traditions of the family are destroyed, then naturally the whole family becomes immersed in irreligion, in adharma. So what is this kula dharma that Arjuna is speaking of? The kula dharma is the dharma of each family according to the varnashram system. According to the varnashram system, one is either a Brahman or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra. And according to one's position within the varnashram system, one has certain duties to perform and certain religious activities to perform. A Brahman has certain kinds of religious activities which may not always be necessary or to that extent for a Kshatriya, for example. A Brahman has to be more engaged in sacrifice and study than a Kshatriya. So like that, each has his or her own kula dharma. So when the kula dharma is destroyed, then everything is destroyed, Arjuna is saying. How is the kula dharma destroyed? When the people who protect and propagate the kula dharma within the kula or the family are themselves destroyed. Who are the people who maintain the religion in the family? Generally, it is, or it should be, the elders. The elders who have themselves been trained by their elders when they were young, should now train the youngsters in the family in the path of dharma. They should engage them in religious activities. So the whole purpose of the varnashram system is to facilitate spiritual upliftment of all people in society. So now all the elders and even most of the youngsters are all assembled on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna is thinking, if all the elders are killed, then who is going to maintain the dharma in the family? Who is going to teach the younger people? what is going to happen to the Kula Dharma, and then what is going to happen to the Kula itself. So therefore, the Kula Dharma and the Kul both must be preserved. Therefore, we cannot fight. Because if I fight, then I am going to kill all of them. Now, this Kula Dharma is a word that is sometimes misunderstood. Kula Dharma, loosely speaking, means family traditions. Now, in India, you know how complicated it is. Each society, each community, each caste, each family has its own particular and peculiar family traditions coming down for so many generations. And whenever there is any deviation from that, then there is hue and cry among the elders. Sometimes this hue and cry is good if the deviation is a bad deviation. But if it is a good deviation, then there should not be a hue and cry. Let me illustrate with a simple example. Here in Belgaum we find that there are certain festivals or certain occasions, one should not call them festivals, but there are certain occasions which are considered to be of some kind of religious importance, and at that time animals are slaughtered by the hundreds and thousands. Many animals are brought to the home, and for days before this particular occasion you will see goats moving here and there everywhere, and you know the reason. And on that day there is mass slaughter. It is a horrible sight and a situation. And then everybody gets drunk, all the men will get drunk, and then everybody will be eating meat for days together. And this is what goes on. And some of our devotees who have come from those backgrounds or those communities, when they protested, there was hue and cry in their community. That how can you do this? This is our Kula Dharma. So one particular devotee came asking that Lord Krishna says, or Arjuna says in Gita, that Kula Dharma should be protected. So here this is our Kula Dharma. So why do you object when we do all these things? So Kula Dharma should be Dharma. Dharma means religion. It should not be concocted. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is described that Dharma means the words of God. That which is laid down by God is Dharma. Anything that you or I or anybody else of this world concocts, that is not Dharma. So most of the so-called Kula Dharmas going on now are all concocted Dharmas, devised at some point in time in the past, either few generations ago, maybe many centuries ago, we don't know. But all concocted, made out of ignorance of higher spiritual principles. Many times these traditions are made out of for political reasons, for social reasons, economic reasons, but not for spiritual reasons. So if there are Kula Dharmas or traditions that are based on genuine dharmic principles, spiritual principles, then those Kula Dharmas are all right. For example, we see that there are certain families where it has been a tradition never to touch meat or to offer water and aarti to Tulsi every day, and so on. So such traditions which are in keeping with Dharma as laid down in Gita, Bhagavatam, in the Puranas and so on, such Dharma should be maintained. But we find that many times youngsters are now deviating from these principles. It is generally said that if the grandfather's time, there is nice puja house in the puja room in the house, etc., some worship is going on. In the father's generation, that is the next generation, there will be photo only. The temple worship will not be there. And next generation, that is son's generation, even photo will vanish. And then the philosophy will be, we will just go 5 minutes every day, 2 minutes, do this and go away. And next generation, everything gone. So by every generation the good traditions are lost, but somehow the bad traditions are maintained. The killing of animals, the drinking of liquor, all that goes on. We are maintaining Kula Dharma. So Kula Dharma must be that which is sanctioned by Shastra. Now we find that Ganesh Chaturthi is very, very widely celebrated in certain parts of the country. Now, if you trace the history or the origin of this festival, It is very recent, less than 100 years ago. It was actually propagated by a certain political leader who was involved in the freedom struggle of India to unite the people, particularly the Hindus. It was created, it was propagated widely so that people could come together on a common platform, be united and therefore fight against the British. From material point of view, whether that was good or not is another question. But from the spiritual point of view, this thing was propagated so widely and that became the Kula Dharma from that time in so many families. And today, everybody blindly does it. So everybody will bring Lord Ganesh in their house because everybody else is doing it. They don't know why it is being done, since when it was started, what kind of religious merit they get out of it. They don't know. There is no spiritual principle behind it. But they simply get. And then they will do something and it becomes very difficult. And because there is no spiritual principle or understanding behind it, therefore, you know what the Ganesh Chaturthi processions are like on the streets. At least in a place like Mumbai, it is absolutely horrible. All the people are simply drunk. They come and dance in such a vulgar way on the streets. It is such a horrible situation. It is a disgrace to Dharma. It is a disgrace to this land of Dharma. And even the ladies are dancing in such a way on the street, openly. And everyone is just drunk and making merry on the street. Lord Ganesh, poor Lord Ganesh, is forgotten completely on the side. He is there somewhere. So Lord Ganesh is simply an excuse for drinking, making merry, and doing all kinds of things that have nothing to do with Dharma. Actually speaking, the government should come down heavily on such principles. Because this is a great offense against Dharma, it misleads people and makes people think, the ignorant people especially, that this is what religion is. This is what our Dharma is. Our Dharma means once a year when Lord Ganesh comes, then you drink, dance on the street and then make merry. Go and collect donations from everyone, play loud film music at the pandal or some other vulgar music you play, and that is your Dharma. There are some, of course, who in a very sober way worship Lord Ganesh in the house. But when did it all begin? It only began with a political call some 100 years ago. It didn't have a spiritual basis for it. So therefore, even when people come to Krishna consciousness, they understand Bhagavad Gita, they have been hearing for years together, this attachment to these older Kula Dharmas is so powerful that people find it very difficult to give them up. They cannot give up. So only by proper, clear spiritual understanding of the principles of Gita and Bhagavatam can we really understand that the ultimate object of our worship has to be only Lord Krishna. All the others are devis and devatas who are representatives of the Supreme Lord. This is not a matter of promoting one god of a particular community. There is a wrong impression that Vishnu or Krishna is a Vaishnava god. He is the god of the Vaishnavas, no doubt. But he is the god of everyone. Not just the Vaishnavas. God is God. It is not that God belongs to some particular community or some particular caste. God is God for everyone. There is no question of your God and my God. So in this way, there is so much ignorance. And then there are so many institutions nowadays that promote that you just worship your Kuladev or Kuladevi. And whatever you worship is all right. It doesn't matter which devata, what deity you worship, it doesn't matter. You just worship, maintain your Kula Dharma. And in this part of the country, this is also very popular. In many places we see the slogans also. So this is actually misleading of the public. So public gets a wrong impression of what this Kula Dharma really means. So Kula Dharma means Varnashrama Dharma. If you are a Grihastha, do your householder's duties nicely. If you are a Sannyasi, be a perfect Sannyasi. If you are a Kshatriya, be a perfect Kshatriya, and so on. So that is the real meaning of Dharma. So Arjuna is saying here that Kulakshaya Pranashyanti Kula Dharma Sanatanaha. So the Kula Dharmas are finished, and because of that, the whole family becomes absorbed in irreligious activity. And then what happens when the elders become absorbed in irreligious activity? That is mentioned by the Lord in text 40. So let us chant text 40. Kindly repeat after me. Adharma Bhibhavat Krishna Pradushyanti Kulastriyaha Strishu Dushta Suvashneya Jayate Varna Sankaraha. Translation: when irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted. And from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. So Arjuna is saying, adharma abhibhavat. So when adharma or irreligion becomes predominant, when the whole family comes into adharma, then what happens? Pradushyanti kulastriyaha. The kulastriya or the women of the family become polluted. Pradushyanti. Now, why does it happen? Because when the family gets into irreligious activities, the men become unscrupulous, immoral, irreligious. So naturally, the women of the family will also think, our men are behaving like this, so let us also behave like that. We will also behave irreligiously. The men are supposed to set the standard. They are not behaving properly, so let us also do it. So in this way, the women of the family are then led astray. And then they become polluted. And when they are polluted, what happens? Trishu dushta. So when the women become polluted, O Varshneya, O descendant of Vrishni, Jayate Varna Sankaraha, then there comes unwanted children because of unchaste women. So in Vedic society, a lot of emphasis was given to creating ideal men and women in society. The men should be those who are following the principles of dharma very strongly, who are very virtuous, and the women also should be very chaste and faithful. That makes for a very good, sound human population, a society. The Vedic society was meant to create a good population. What is the meaning of a good population? Good population means that men, women and children who are cultured, who are spiritually educated, who are spiritually following the principles of dharma, this is good population. Good population does not necessarily mean simply those who are suited, booted, or who are sophisticated in modern terms, in material terms. That is not good population. Good population has to be seen according to how much they are following dharma. That is a question. And a good population was necessary in order to have a peaceful society that would be prosperous and that would make spiritual progress. Because the function of human life is to make spiritual advancement. And the human society by the Varnashrama system has been designed by Lord Krishna in such a way as to facilitate the spiritual progress of the human beings. This is the only purpose of human life, to make advancement in spiritual life. So how does one get a good population? Now this is a very important point. If we want a good population in the society, if we want the society to be peaceful, prosperous, stable and making spiritual advancement, then the basis, the foundation of it is that the women must be chaste and faithful. The role of the woman in the Vedic society was very important. Her role was that she was a cornerstone. If she was faithful, the whole society would be good. If she became polluted, the whole society would become polluted. This is the important position of the woman in the Vedic society. There is a wrong impression in the minds of people
that in the olden times or the Vedic society, the women were suppressed, or there was injustice against them, or they were considered to be inferior, and so on and so forth. But that is not so. People speak like this because they are in ignorance. They do not know, truly speaking, what is the Vedic culture, and neither they know what the Shastras say about the position of the woman. So we find that so much importance is given, because when the woman is strong and pure, then she creates the samskaras, or the culture in the children and in the family. And when the children grow up and become adults, then they will become the future of the society. And much of the character and education of the children depends upon how the mother has dealt with them. Because the father may be out all day earning his bread and butter, or he may be here and there busy in so many other activities outside the house. But the way the mother will bring up the children will determine, largely speaking, their character when they grow up. Of course, when the children are born, they also bring the karma of the previous life with them. So to some extent, those forces from the past lives are also at play in determining the character of the child. But mostly, it is the samskaras, the influences of the mother. And it is not that the lady in the house influences only the children. There are so many stories in our Shastra of how the women have actually regulated the husband and brought them on track. And if it wasn't for the wife, the husband would have gone astray. The whole family would have probably become degraded and lost. So it is very important that the woman has to be chaste and pure and be following the dharma properly. Because the men in this world are generally unscrupulous, they are always seeking opportunity to exploit women. Therefore, it has been advised in the scriptures that women should be always protected. In their childhood, they must be protected by the father. In their youth, when they are married, they should be protected by their husband. And when they are grown up, they should be protected by their grown-up son. So this is the system to protect the womanhood from unscrupulous men who have no qualms in exploiting women. So when there is proper protection of the women, then the women remain pure, they remain chaste, and the men also, under the influence of the pure women, they also become pure. The power of a chaste woman is legendary in our Shastras. Just as the power of a man comes by celibacy or brahmacharya, the strength of a woman comes from her chastity. It doesn't matter. There are so many examples that the husband was a rogue, scoundrel, but the wife was chaste, so she was very powerful. Sometimes the husband may have been a very weak man in terms of religious principles, but still, because the woman remained, wife remained chaste, she became very powerful, just like Gandhari. Gandhari was so chaste that the moment she heard that the man she was going to be married to was blind, from that moment she blindfolded her eyes, because she thought, if my husband cannot see, then I have no right to see. And she did not see for the rest of her life after that. Of course, this is an extreme case, and to even think of such a thing in the modern day and age is extremely difficult. It is impossible practically. But this is our history. These cases are there. Dhritarashtra was spiritually weak. Gandhari had 100 evil sons. But she was so chaste, and so she had the power to curse even Lord Krishna. And Krishna maintained the principle of this world. Who can curse Krishna ultimately? And even if someone curses Krishna, does Krishna, being the Supreme Lord, not have the power to just see that the curse does not have effect? He could easily have done that. But he accepted that curse to honor the system that he himself has created in this world, that a chaste woman is very powerful. So she cursed that similarly his own family would also get killed by internal quarrels. Just like the Kaurava and Pandavas have fought with each other and killed each other, he said, I curse you because you are responsible that your family will also get destroyed. And sure enough, the Yadu dynasty also became destroyed in Dwarka or in Prabhas Kshetra in the same way. So Gandhari, because she was chaste, she was so powerful. There are many, many stories in the Shastra about chaste women. It makes a very interesting and enlightening reading. It is not possible for us to narrate all the stories, but just a couple, one or two, just to give the proper example. There is a story that all of you may have read in your childhood in Amar Chitra Katha or some other form of story from children's books, the story of Nala Damayanti. Both Nala actually was a king, and Damayanti was the daughter of a king. And from the position of a king, he was reduced to such abject poverty that both of them did not even have proper clothes to wear. Only one cloth they had, and they would share 50-50, half-half. They were so poor. They barely had anything to eat. But still, Damayanti never gave up her husband.
She didn't think, oh, I was such a queen, I was living in such a nice, wealthy atmosphere, I had everything, and now my husband is on the streets. So better to give up such a husband and live in comfortable atmosphere. She never thought like that. She lived with her husband right through every situation. So therefore, this is called Satita Dharma. Sati means one who is chaste. A chaste woman creates a chaste family. A chaste family creates a chaste society. A chaste society is a happy society. Srila Prabhupada explained that many, many years ago, when he was a young man, he remembers distinctly seeing a beggar couple on the street. You know, many times you see beggars on the road, and the families are sitting there, and he saw this couple. This man's face was totally disfigured, maybe because of some accident. He was very ugly, and he was also deformed physically. And also, he had no money. He was on the street. But he was neat and clean. So he was puzzled. Prabhupada was puzzled that he's such a beggar. Normally beggars are very dirty. So this beggar is sitting here, and then he saw his wife was next to him. She was also neat and clean, and she was taking care to serve nicely. And therefore the beggar couple, both, even though they were in such poverty, they were neat and clean, and everything was going on. So Prabhupada said, see, this lady, she was so chaste, even though she was a beggar, that she was looking after her husband. So normally, probably many other women may have left such a man and gone. Then who is going to look after such a person who is so much disfigured? He doesn't have anything to eat. He is not providing me any of the basic necessities of life. So like that, there are many scriptures. We see in the Puranas, in the Bhagavatam, for example, that when the king would take Vanaprastha, he would go into the forest, then the queen would go after him. Lord Ram, when he went to Vanvas, Sita Devi followed. Although Lord Ram himself and all the others, including Lakshman, Kausalya, everybody tried to convince Sita Devi to stay behind. But she said, no, the role of a wife is to follow the husband. So I must go where my husband is. And she followed him. How can I be living in a comfortable situation when my husband is living in such distress? So she followed the husband and she went along with him. And when they were at Chitrakoot, just before they actually entered into the dense forest, they happened to come to the ashram of Atri Muni. And Atri Muni was very happy to welcome them. And Atri Muni's wife was a famous Anusuya Devi. Anusuya is known as one of the best examples of a chaste woman. It is said that she was so chaste that she prevented the sunrise by the power of her chastity. Because at one time, one lady came to her crying that my husband has been cursed by a particular rishi to die before sunrise. So please help me. So when Anasuya heard the whole story, she became very moved. And she ordered that the sun will not rise. So the sun did not rise. So the husband kept on living. And there became so much disturbance in the universe because the whole system was upset. Because everything goes according to a certain order, sunrise, sunset, everything is going properly in the universe according to a certain order. But because of Anasuya's chastity and her power, she stopped the sunrise. And then finally all the devis and devatas had to come and plead, and then they went to the rishi, please do something, otherwise this lady is going to create havoc in the universe. What is going to happen? So finally, then the curse was taken back. There are so many such stories we hear. Savitri, Saptikam, she stopped, yes, control Yamaraj and forced him to give life back to her husband simply because she was so chaste. These are the stories. There are many, many such stories. The wife of Jamadagni Rishi, Renuka, was so chaste that it is said that when Jamadagni Rishi would sit down for his worship and his tapasya, then his wife would fetch him the ingredients of the worship from various places, some roots, herbs, flowers, and whatever else he required. And she would also fetch him water from the river. But do you know how she fetched him water? She fetched him water in a cloth. She used a cloth as a pot. Now just imagine, if you have a cloth like this, can you carry water in this? It was a cloth. But she was so chaste that she simply put her cloth in the river and carry the water and come in that cloth, and the water would not flow out. One day, Renuka Devi, she saw Indra, Indra who is the king of the demigods. But she did not know it was Indra, or she may have known. But she saw only his shining golden hair from behind. And she became little attracted. And the moment she became attracted, then the water flowed out. The water did not remain. And when she was unable to come back with water, then immediately Jamadagni Rishi understood something has gone wrong. Of course, such standards in Kali Yuga are impossible to attain. But the point of narrating these stories is the principle of how powerful a chaste woman becomes. So these values must be inculcated in our people. Inasmuch as the women must be chaste, the men also must be setting a good standard of religious behavior. It is not that the men must expect only the women to be chaste and the men to just weaken to everything we like. If the man expects the wife to be like Sita Devi, then he must also try to be like Lord Ram. So that is also important. So there are so many such couples, like Sati and Parvati and Shiva, or there is Lakshmi and Narayan. The highest example of the chaste woman is Lakshmi Devi. So God himself sets the example of a perfect husband, and his expansion Lakshmi Devi, she sets the example of the ideal chaste wife. When there is Prithu Maharaj and Arshi, there is Karbala Muni and Devahuti, there is Shavan Muni, Sukanya, dozens and dozens and dozens of such examples of ideal husband-wife combination, where both lived according to dharma. So therefore chastity was very, very important. And if the women were properly protected, and if they also gave proper samskaras to the children, then everything would flourish in the society. Samskaras begin even before birth. Samskaras are purificatory rituals. And the first samskar to be performed is called the Garbhadhana samskar. Garbhadhana samskar is done when the husband and wife come together for the purpose of begetting a child. Now this is very important, because the act of begetting a child normally would make one forgetful of the Lord. But by performing such a samskar, one's consciousness becomes prepared, it becomes pure. And when the husband and wife, their consciousness is pure, then the offspring that they bring about will also be pure. But normally what happens is, that these days, there is no such conception of any samskar. People simply beget children for the sake of begetting children, without consideration of time, place and circumstance. There are proper times for conceiving a child. There is a proper method. There are proper religious rituals to be performed before a child is conceived. Normally, in the earlier days, when the husband and wife decided that they were to conceive a child, it would be a known fact in the family and everywhere. Proper religious ceremonies would be done. And therefore, the husband and wife mentally prepared themselves to be in the proper consciousness, because they were aware
that the consciousness in which we are now will determine the consciousness of the child. There is a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the great sage Kashyap Muni. One of his wives was Diti, and she approached him at a wrong time, usually at the sunset time for conception. He refused, but she insisted, and then the child, the children that were born, were, do you know their names? Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, the two great Rakshasa or Asuras who came about in the world. So therefore, when conception of children takes place without proper purification in the mind of the mother and father of the child, then the child also becomes demoniac. So today we find that nobody pays any heed to such samskars or purificatory ceremonies. So samskaras begin with the Garbhadhana samskar, and soon after birth also there are so many samskars to be performed. So this is a very big subject. We can't dwell into it at great detail today. But the point is that such samskars are very essential to create a very pure and stable society. So all these things are involved in the process of creating a happy society. So the Vedic culture is very vast, very deep, many, many things to be understood, many subtle things that govern our consciousness. So therefore, Arjun is saying here that when the women become polluted, then what happens? When Varnasam Karaha, then unwanted population is born. Nowadays we see that because of too much free mixing of men and women, therefore there is no principle of chastity left anymore in modern world. The women many times of course are going out to work. There is free mixing between the men and the women, and therefore how can there be chastity? In our educational institutions, there is so much of free mixing between young boys and young girls. How is it possible to train up the young people in proper spiritual principles? It is not possible. Therefore, we cannot build up a society of chaste women and of strongly virtuous men. Very difficult. And gradually, as the generations go on and the society becomes more and more permissive, we find that the culture degrades. And with the degradation of culture comes an increase of suffering. And you just take a look at the Western countries at this time. Many times people think that this is just old-fashioned talk. But let us look at the condition of the world today. What is the divorce rate in the Western countries now? Within 3 years of marriage, 50% of the marriages break up. Nowadays it is more. Only in the last 1 month the divorce rate has come down because people haven't really shaken. And now they understand that we should better think about life seriously. But imagine within the first 3 years, 50-60% of the marriages break up. Why? Because everything is based simply on physical attraction. That's all. There is no other basis. So therefore there is no principle of chastity. When there is some other attraction, then the husband or wife leave the spouse and they go away. So how can you have a society where everybody is happy and peaceful when basic morals cannot be maintained? Basic morals for the sake of the survival of the society. I read an interesting newspaper report 1 or 2 years ago where a survey was carried out in some Western country, and the people were asked, especially the younger generation, were asked as to what is the biggest problem in your life. And interestingly, the answer they gave was the fear that my husband or wife will leave me, or the boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever it is, they will leave me. That is the biggest fear. Why is there such a fear? Did our people in our grandfather's generation have this fear? Because they understood the sanctity of marriage. They understood that marriage was a very sacred agreement where the wife would be always with the husband, serving faithfully in a chaste way, and the husband took the vow that he would protect the wife at all costs. And they understood that even if they had differences and disagreements, they would somehow live together and understand and continue. But today, for the slightest disagreement, there is breakup of marriage. Because the principles of virtue and dharma are not being propagated. So in the name of being modern and progressive, we are bringing about a certain value system in our society which is very dangerous. And anyone who is perceptive, who can see what the future holds, will see the social and moral degradation of this country. Just like the other Western countries now. Socially, morally, they are in such a bad situation. People in this country are very much mesmerized by the West. West is like swarga. If someone can go to America, it is like he has achieved his life ambition. So what is the condition of life there? Socially, they are miserable. It is not a good life. For those who have actually been there and studied that society at close quarters, you will understand how horrible that kind of society is. And personally, I can vouch that for all its problems, the pollution, the corruption, the crowds, the bad manners of the people, the other problems, there is no place like this land. The kind of spiritual culture that we have inherited is so powerful. And these are the different elements of the spiritual culture that we have. The virtue of the man, the chastity of the woman. Because in this background, dharma can be cultivated and one can make spiritual advancement. In a society that is immoral, that is only seeking temporary quick gratification of the senses, how can there be any spiritual conception? Such people have no inclination to spiritual understanding. You try to speak to these people about spirituality, they are so far removed. The mind is only absorbed in how to enjoy. Eat, drink, be merry. Who has seen tomorrow? So what then is the difference between such human beings and animals? They are called dvipadpashu, two-legged animals. So the world today is simply full of two-legged animals. Because there is no principle of dharma being understood in the proper way. So Arjuna is saying here, Sri Dishtasu Vasneya Jayate Vayasankaraha. So see Arjuna's logic as he progresses from point to point. First of all, he says when the elders in the family are killed, the Kula Dharma will be destroyed. When the Kula Dharma is destroyed, Adharma or irreligion will become predominant in the family. When Adharma comes in the family, the women will get polluted because the men also have become unscrupulous and immoral. When the women become polluted, there will be adultery. When there is adultery, unwanted children will come. And these unwanted children, because they're unwanted, they will be unhappy. They will not be looked after properly. Many times the mothers will desert the children. Do you know how many abortions are done in India every year? Any idea? Would any of you like to make a wild guess?
Yes, anyone would try to say? 1 lakh? 11 million. 10 crore abortions every year. Of them, only 1 million are legal abortions. 10 million are illegal abortions. And most of these illegal abortions are done because of pregnancy out of wedlock. They are unwanted children. So out of social shame or whatever may be the condition. When the children are unwanted, the condition has come today in this age that a mother is willing to kill the child within her womb. Bhrunahatya, the murder of the fetus. This is a horrible crime. When you kill another person, it is called murder. But at least this person has some kind of chance to protect himself or herself. He can shout, he can raise his hand to defend himself. But what chance does a child in the womb have to defend itself? Do you know the process of abortion? It is a process where it is too gory to describe in this temple. Where the child's body is cut into pieces and the child is slaughtered. This is the condition that a mother is willing to do this to her child because the child is unwanted for whatever reason. Maybe because of economic condition. But does that mean that an innocent child should be slaughtered horribly within the womb? There is such terrible karmic reaction for this. People don't understand the value of this. People are only seeing the immediate future. I want to be relieved of my immediate problem. The immediate problem is I will have to deal with this child and whatever comes as a result, so kill the child. But does that mean that an innocent child should be slaughtered horribly within the womb? There is such terrible karmic reaction for this. People don't understand the value of this. People are only seeing the immediate future. I want to be relieved of my immediate problem. The immediate problem is I will have to deal with this child and whatever comes as a result, so kill the child. There are so many cases we read in the papers where the mother will desert the child in the nursing home and run away, or the mother will just leave the child somewhere after birth and go away. So unwanted children, what can be the consciousness of these unwanted children? So the word that is used here by Arjun is Varna Sankara. Varna means the particular Varna, like Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Sankara means mixed. So Varna Sankara means that such unwanted children, you cannot make out their Varna. Is he a Brahman? Is he a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? What is he? You can't make out. So it's all mixed. And that is the situation we find today. Very difficult to understand who is what. So such unwanted population has flooded the whole world today. And therefore we have people with demoniac propensities who are born. And such horrible things are going on in society. And people, because they are so mesmerized by the glitter and glamour of our science and technology, and this so-called forward thinking, and this whole misunderstanding that our culture is an old-fashioned culture, they don't think deeply. We have ceased to become a nation of thinkers. Even our educational system has no thinking. It doesn't make you think. It only makes you study and memorize so that you get good marks in the examination. So in the name of science and progressive civilization, our students and our schools and colleges have become spiritual slaughterhouses where no spiritual culture is entertained. So therefore, whatever points Arjun is raising here are very valid points. However, later on, we will see how Lord Krishna deals with these points that he raises. So in any case, what Arjuna is saying here, then unwanted children flood and a hellish situation is created. So what comes after that? Let us see what Arjuna says in text 41. So kindly open your books to text 41 and kindly repeat after me. Sankaro narakayeva kulagnanam kulasya cha patanti pitaro yesham lupta pindo dakakriya. Translation: an increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. So let us continue with Arjun's logic. Arjun has come to the point of Jayate Varna Sankaraha, that the unwanted children are produced. So what happens when these unwanted children are born? Sankaro Narakayeva. Sankara Naraka Eva. Eva certainly. So a hellish situation is created when unwanted children flood the world. When a child is unwanted, naturally the parents are unable to give the same kind of affection to the child. Psychologically also, the child is not able to become normal in many ways. And therefore, because the children were not procreated in the proper consciousness, and the procreation has taken place like the animal society, therefore a hellish society is created everywhere. Srila Prabhupada explains that in Satya Yuga, there were only one or two people of demoniac mentality like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and they were very powerful. But today, we have millions and millions of such tiny Hiranyakashipus and Hiranyakshas who are being born by the thousands every day in all the maternity homes and hospitals in the world. What is the solution to this great tragedy that the world is facing now? What are you going to do? With every passing generation, the children are growing up completely differently. You see the children of today, children every time are mischievous, there is no doubt. But as the generations go on, the atmosphere, the environment is becoming so polluted by the modes of passion and ignorance that the degradation of the children in this world is rapidly increasing. One elderly lady was telling me some months ago that when our children grew up, we didn't even know how they grew up. It just happened so quickly they grew up. But now my grandchildren, I see it is such a big problem in their growing up period. It is so difficult. So we see as the generations pass that the consciousness is getting degraded of the people. And if we are to have a stable and sober society, we must do some very deep thinking. And the points that Arjuna is raised here are definitely food for thought for all of us. So he says, Sankaro narakayaiva kulabhyanam kulasyacha. For whom is the hellish situation created? Kulabhyanam, for those who are killers of the family, and for the kula or the family itself. Patanti pitaro hyesham. Pitar, pitru. Pitru means the forefathers. Patanti, they will fall down. Why? Lupta pinda udaka kriyaha. Now you know that there is a Shraddha ceremony that is performed where one usually offers pinda. For one offers food and water. Tarpan. The water that is offered is called tarpan and the food that is offered is called pinda. It is offered to the ancestors. So all these particular rituals are stopped and the forefathers, wherever they may be, they don't receive the pinda or the tarpan. The purpose of the pinda is to release the ancestors from whatever difficult hellish situations they may be in due to some sinful activities that they may have performed at some time in the past, in some previous lives. And when this pinda is stopped, then they may even fall down into hellish conditions. Therefore Arjun says, Patanti pitaro hesham, that the pitrus or the forefathers, they fall down. Because all these pinda and udaka, udak means water, that is tarpan. When the pinda and tarpan is not offered, lupta, it is lost, then the forefathers also fall down. We will discuss next time in more detail about what this pinda is, what is the significance of such things, what is the science behind it, and how should a devotee of the Lord deal with this. So we have come to this important point. We are almost at the end of the first chapter. We need one more session and then we will finish the first chapter and we will move on to the second chapter thereafter. So we will stop now for questions and answers. If any of you have any questions, feel free to ask the questions now. We have 10 minutes before the darshan opens.
Krishna,
Hare Krishna.
I don't know whether I should ask this question in such a crowd.
No, you can definitely ask any question.
But then
no,
this is for the benefit of, I think, everyone.
Yes.
Those who have come across such people, I'm going to discuss now.
Yes.
If some family, I've heard, if some family gets 2-3 baby girls and they go for the abortion moment they find that the fourth baby is a girl baby. And the reason what they give is that they are not, I mean, in a position to earn the livelihood for the third baby girl, or they are not able to take the burden of a baby girl in a society where we live in. And at the same time, doctor also suggests for all that. Then how should we really explain to them?
Yes, this is a very important problem. It's a very major problem in our society today. It's a big subject. One can go in great detail and analyze this difficulty. But just to be brief, let's look at it like this. If the fourth child was a girl and was already born, would the parents kill that child? What do you think? No. So if they are not willing to kill the child after the child is born, because obviously it is murder, it is something horrible, then why would they do it when the child is in the womb? Is the child not alive when it is inside the womb? Is the child less of a human being because it is physiologically less developed at that time inside the womb? So this is murder. You are murdering an innocent child because of your problem. How is a child concerned with your problem? It is a problem of the parents. The parents have created the child, and once the child is created, then you are duty bound and responsible to look after. Otherwise, if they didn't want to have the burden of looking after a child, they should not have procreated a child. It's as simple as that. Whatever, there is no justification to justify the killing of the child in the womb, because it is murder. What is the fault of the child? The child is being murdered. Because the parents have some economic problem, can you murder the child because of that? Is it the child's fault or the child's problem that the parent is not able to earn enough? What kind of civilization is this, that our educated people, the doctors, the bureaucrats, the government, the whole society is encouraging this activity? The intellectuals are encouraging this activity. This is a horrible sin, and we will get terrible reactions for this. And we are seeing as a society the terrible sinful reactions that will come because of this. And this so-called amniocentesis, where they do the sonography, ultrasonography, to find out whether it is a girl child or a male child. And if it is a girl child, they kill. They abort. So people have no understanding now. In the early early days, when people say, it was told to the sages in the past, that a time will come when people will kill cows and they will kill their own children, the sages couldn't believe it. Then in Kali Yuga such a thing will happen. They said, no, how is it possible that people will kill cows and people will kill their own children? Impossible, I don't believe that such a thing can happen. The Bhagavatam also, it is stated that a time will come in Kali Yuga when parents will eat their own children. Doesn't it sound so horrible? It sounds unbelievable now, that parents will produce children to eat them, because such a scarcity will come. But at that time in the past, people found it impossible to believe that mothers would kill their own children in the womb. It was as impossible for them to believe that at that time as we find now to believe that in future mothers will eat their own children. Some of our devotees, they downloaded something from the internet, some pictures from Taiwan of human beings eating baby children, fetuses. And the picture, graphic picture is there. It is considered a delicacy in Taiwan. It is marketed in the shops, in bottles. They are sold just like jam and chutney is sold in our country here. And our devotees have these pictures and they are showing them around and telling people, look, today you are slaughtering animals, eating meat, tomorrow you will be doing this. This is the logical extension of eating meat today. Today you find nothing repulsive in killing animals for your tongue. Tomorrow you will not find it repulsive to kill children. And even though they may not have themselves killed the child, it's a fetus. But what kind of animalistic man is it who can eat a dead child? If you don't believe it, there are pictures. So therefore the time will come, if we think that killing the child in the womb is not a sinful activity, it is nothing objectionable, then a time will come when we will find it not objectionable to eat children. And it's already happened. I heard it is happening in New York also. In some restaurants they are selling. And such are the horrible things that are going on in the world. And the only way to restore this world to sanity again, it is not a question of moralizing, it is simply a question of being practical, is to come back to Bhagavad Gita. That's a fact. If we want our society to become like this in future, let us become a little visionary. Let us have some foresight. The way things are going today, just extrapolate it and see where things will lead us 50 years from now, 100 years from now. Let the other countries in the world be a model. Technologically, they are where we want to be. Economically, they are where we want to be. But if we want to be at the same level technologically and economically, then we will also be at the level at which they are morally and socially. Do we want that? This is the question. Do we want our society to also do the same things they are doing now in Taiwan and New York and other places? So therefore there is a need, a crying need for spiritual education in a completely universal way, in a scientific way, not in a fanatical way that is being seen today in the world. A very scientific, systematic presentation of spiritual knowledge as presented by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. This is the greatest science, and the people of this world must understand this, and particularly the people in our country must understand, because this land is a land of spiritual culture. And therefore when much is given, much is expected. In the land of spiritual culture, if we neglect understanding higher spiritual values, we will suffer more than the other countries. So therefore the trauma that this country is going through on various fronts is largely because we have descended into sin and we have neglected the spiritual principles of Bhagavad Gita. So we must educate people, make them logically understand how this killing of the girl child or any child is such a sinful act, that it is plain and simple murder. We must explain logically. We must show them, if necessary, for those who still don't understand the logic, we must show them pictures. This is what abortion really means. This is what you are actually doing to your child. People have become so dull-headed today that unless they are shown such pictures graphically, they don't come to their senses. This is the unfortunate fact today. Gone is the time where you just spoke a few words and people develop faith in the Shastra. Those days are gone now. So therefore, spiritual education is a crying need of the hour, if society is to become sane now. Otherwise, we are going to witness more and more of such incidents as have been grabbing the headlines in the newspapers in the past few weeks or 1 or 2 weeks. This is going to increase. So the call to understand Bhagavad Gita is a call to return to sanity. It is not a call of fanaticism. It is a call of coming back to our original blissful position as eternal servants of the Lord. Yes? Yes.
Materially, and why in spite of social and moral degradation in the West, materially and technologically it is so advanced? Why not our country? Spiritually it could be, but why not otherwise?
Because the Western countries are going through a phase of collective karma, where they are reaping some of the benefits of their past pious activity. But that will also run out. The steam will run out, petrol will run out soon. Petrol, I mean, not literally, that will also run out, of course, but I am talking of the petrol of their karma from previous years. Because the amount of sin is increasing so much, once that stock is over, then they will only have to face the collective reaction. So therefore, whatever sins they are doing now will all have horrible consequences for them in the future. They are already seeing it now. And we are blindly imitating them. For us, West is best. This is our philosophy in this country. Anything that the West does, we want to blindly imitate. That is our fault, that is our problem. And we can see that certain countries were at the top, and there is a cycle according to karma. There was a time when Indian civilization was at the top of the world, then it came down, then China, then Egypt, then Greece, then Rome, then Britain, the great British Empire where the sun never sets. Today Britain is not considered such a powerful country. Today it is America. Tomorrow America will go down, some other country will come up. So collective karma is going up and down. So we are not concerned much with these material changes. What we are concerned is the spiritual culture, the spiritual development that must take place. India is not meant for technological advancement and all these things. Although in order to survive in this world, we must have these things. But the point is that India's strong point is spiritual culture, spiritual development. And that is where we are lacking. We are meant for that. We are created for that. Even today in the world, if anyone wants to understand spiritual things, they come to India. So if we simply follow the spiritual principles of Gita, this country can again revive its original glory. And because this is the land of spiritual culture, if the world is to be saved from its degradation, India must be saved. This is the logic. Because here still there are holy places, there are holy people, there is a holy culture. This is still surviving. So it is our duty to protect it, to preserve it, to nourish it, and to make it grow, and to make people understand it all over the world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Bharat Bhumi Tahila Manushya Janmajar Janma Sarthak Kari Kar Parupakar. For those who are born in this land of Bharat Varsha, it is their duty to make their lives spiritually perfect, and to help others in the world make their life spiritually perfect. Alright, so we will just have darshan now for 10 minutes, and if there are any questions remaining after that, we will come to the questions, and thereafter there is prasad. So a request is that kindly nobody should go without taking that prasad. Thank you. The question here is, it's a written question that has come to me. How should the girls deal with who have got married with materialistic men? The question, I suppose, is that if a girl has got married to a man who is not interested in spiritual life, then what should she do? Well, she has to try to make him spiritual. And she has to understand that marriages are made in heaven. If she was ordained to have married a certain person, she must try to be satisfied with her circumstances. And at any cost, she should not give up her own spiritual seeking. And hope and pray that someday the husband will also develop a spiritual bent of mind. And she should depend on the Lord and carry on her life. Are there any other questions? Hare Krishna.
Actually, the present days are concerned. Actually, our politicians are the lawmakers and lawbreakers in the present society. So, if they come to the spiritual platform, our society can be easily improved. How to bring them in a spiritual platform?
Very difficult. But nevertheless, it must be done. Slowly, slowly, slowly. everyone, whether they are politicians or from any walk of life, there is no escaping this fact that if we want society to be a happy place to live in, then we must have all sections of society becoming spiritually conscious, becoming Krishna conscious. There is no doubt about it. And we must learn from our Vedic histories how political leaders would be in the past. Leaders like King Yudhishthir or King Dhruva, King Prithu, King Parikshit, they were leaders of the country and they were very, very saintly as well. So they were called Rajarishi. They were Rajas, also they were Rishis at the same time. So Lord Krishna explains in the Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajarshayo Viduhu. He says, my dear Arjun, this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is coming down from Parampara of the Rajarishis, great kings like Ikshvaku, Nriga and so on. So our political leaders should learn from the example of great political leaders of the past in our Vedic history. They should take inspiration from that. Yatha Raja Tatha Praja. As the Raja will be, so will the Praja be. If the leaders are cheaters, the people will also become cheaters. And that is exactly the point that we see today. So we have to start at all levels, but if the leaders are reformed, then the whole society can be reformed. That is the idea.
Democratic society, people choose the leaders. What does Shastra say about this?
So Prabhupada said, this is not democracy, it is demon crazy. It is a whole lot of ignorant people choosing other ignorant people to the top and creating a complete mess in the society. The leaders should be those who are enlightened people, men of character, men of moral strength, men of integrity, men who know and follow dharma. These should be the leaders. It is not to be by vox populi, by elected by some ignorant people, the common masses, who have no understanding of what should a leader be. And therefore today we have come to a point when elections have become such a farce and such a corrupt phenomenon. Why? Because we have no understanding. We have adopted all these political systems, but now they are there with us to stay. What can be done? So we have to make do with the best possible in the circumstances and go along with it. Democracy is certainly not a healthy system from the spiritual point of view. What we need is benign dictatorships of the kind that was there in our Vedic kings, like King Parikshit. Because they were spiritually enlightened, they listened, they always had a council of saintly people to guide them. Because they were kings, they were not absolute autocrats. They always listened to spiritual advice and they ruled according to dharma. And if they became sinful, then the saintly people would overthrow them. Like in the case of a great rogue king called Vena. Vena was so cruel that he started cheating and plundering and doing everything. So all the Brahmanas at that time, they actually killed him. Just by their mantra power, not by weapons. And they put in place another king. So because they had spiritual power, they could do that. So the ideal system of government is, according to our Shastra, there is an enlightened king who is strong, who is powerful, who has courage, who can lead from the front. When there is battle, he will go right out in the front, and at the same time, in front of the sadhus, he is completely humble and submissive. He understands, learns from them, and then he rules the country according to principles of dharma. This is the standard of our Shastra. Of course, the modern day situation is too far removed from that. We cannot expect realistically that we can bring about such a situation in the near future. So we have to make the best use of a bad bargain, whatever we have now, this demon crazy system, and try to reform the people at all levels, try to make them spiritually conscious, so that there can be some improvement in the society, and hope and pray to God that He will change the hearts of the people along with our efforts. I'm afraid today I spoke very strongly, but sometimes it is required because these things are going on all around in the society and somebody has to say the things plainly. So kindly now take prasadam, and next Saturday also we will continue with our class. Thank you very much. We will chant our prasadam prayers.